Okay, if you're watching this video, I'm sure you know that in North Carolina, there was a terrible hurricane that went through that caused a ton of damage, death, flooding, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And we're checking this story today on X. It broke about an hour ago. Elon Musk posted a post or tweet on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, that FEMA, which is the disaster relief agency in the United States, is actively blocking the delivery of Starlink satellites to the disaster area. I want to show you the posts from Elon Musk, and then Hans and I will discuss in detail what's going on, what could be causing this, so on and so forth. So let me go ahead and share my screen so y'all can follow along with me. Here's the post from Elon Musk about an hour ago at the time of this recording, 11:54 a.m. Central Time on October 4th. This is Friday. Just received this note from a SpaceX engineer helping on the ground in North Carolina. FEMA is not merely failing to adequately help people in trouble, but is actively blocking citizens who try to help. And this is the text from the engineer. Hey, Elon, update here on site in Asheville, North Carolina. We have powered up two large operating bases for choppers to deliver goods into hands. We've deployed 300 plus Starlinks, and outpour is it has saved many lives. The big issue is FEMA is actively blocking shipments and seizing goods and services locally and locking them away to state they are their own. It's very real and scary how much they have taken control to stop people helping. We are blocked now on the shipments of new Starlinks coming in until we get an escort from the fire department, but that may not be enough. And then there was a follow-up from Elon Musk as well on this post. He copied a reply from him to the person and then also a follow-up. WTF, FEMA is both incompetent and stopping people from helping. How can I help? This is like the most Elon Musk reply I've ever seen. Okay. It's true. They are now about to shut down the airspace to regulate the private choppers we're riding in to deliver Starlink and supplies. We are pushing back with Trump team as well to help us, but not looking good. We need help to get word out about FEMA. We spoke with Ivanka and handed out Starlinks with her yesterday, but FEMA then showed up and started blocking us. The largest concern for us here is the FAA throttling flights for our choppers, where they are requiring to from information and mission now to deliver a discrete code. Doing this takes a long time and very cumbersome to the operations. This is the largest concern and most help we could use, but I appreciate, and I'm sure that goes into, you know, your help, blah, blah, blah. And then there was a reply from Larry Goldberg, who is a one of our contributors on this show. He lives in North Carolina, and he's been actively tracking this story as well. And this is a story from Larry, right, that is one of our friends on the channel. He creates content here as well, lives in North Carolina. My neighbor, I'm in the Raleigh area of North Carolina, or Raleigh, depending where you're from, was threatened with arrest when returning from flying the wife of a stranded husband and wife team to safety in his helicopter. He had come back to get the husband to safety. The airspace was open at the time. The fire chief in the local town, which was devastated and without supplies, forbade my neighbor to take the husband in his helicopter and threatened him with arrest, and then called for the airspace to be closed. He had to abandon the husband to an uncertain fate. So it isn't just female officials, though the stories I am hearing about them from my friends are not any better. Officials from many areas are, in their officiousness, a very fancy word, Larry, causing a hell of a lot more problems than they seem able to solve. Not all of them. Other friends had local police help them distribute the Starlink terminals we had acquired, but in general, there is no leadership in the chaos. And if you've been following the story closely, you've probably heard a lot of similar stories from different sources that it has been a very chaotic scene for people trying to deliver aid and not being able to. Of course, this is a chaotic situation. There's going to be a lot of flaws in the system, but this one seems needs to be highlighted, I think, because I think it potentially opens up the door to a much bigger issue. And so I'll let you jump in here and provide any insight that you've seen, anything that you want to add to the conversation. So go for it. But
yeah, I mean, it's definitely very concerning. And the problem is that this is not a one-off situation, that we've seen kind of a repeated pattern from FEMA of really just absolutely bungled disaster response over and over again, whether that was Harvey or Katrina. Actually, well, I don't know that Harvey plays into that. We may need to cut that one out.
The fires in Maui is a big one.
Yeah. Whether it was Katrina, whether it was the fires in Maui, there was a major hurricane that hit the Keys a number of years ago. And it's just a consistent theme that whether it's ineptitude or malice, that these responses are just an absolute, like, it's a disaster of a disaster response. And it's really concerning, but also something that really highlights the problems that we have in our government and in our country right now with an abundance of regulation and rules and just failure on the part of people who are responsible for actually helping citizens. Like, we have a government in theory to be of service to the citizens. It's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. But FEMA seems like it is an organization that gets a lot of funding, and we, the people, don't actually get a competent organization that can perform its stated goal in the hour of need. And that is where, you know, I think this concern comes from. And Elon's initial post highlighted this. You know, it'd be one thing if they were just incompetent, and that would be frustrating, but at least that incompetence could be offset by lots of competent private citizens coming in and being willing to help. Like, there is an abundance of people who are not only have the motivation and the willingness to help and the resources to help, but they're also extremely competent and they can also get things done, and they can operate in an environment where there's uncertainty and chaos like this. But for whatever reason, FEMA also essentially blockades these areas. Like, you can see in the example of the guy who the airspace was open, he flew in with his helicopter and then was told that he had to leave. Couldn't, like, I don't understand what authority a fire chief has to say that a private citizen can't fly another private citizen out of any area, disaster zone or not, and then call for the closing of the airspace. Like, that seems preposterous. And, you know, that's just one example of one person, but then you cascade that and you multiply that by, you know, say a 2/3 absolutely incompetent number of officials operating in all sorts of capacities, whether it's police, fire chiefs, FEMA, FAA, you know, all these different overlapping government agencies who don't really know whose job it is to do what at what point in time. And everyone's default response is not, hey, let's do everything we can to help. It's, hey, how do we cover our butt and make sure something bad doesn't happen? And the effect of all of that is that things don't get done. And you're in a literal crisis situation where minutes matter, seconds matter, days definitely matter. And instead of accelerating, they slow down.
That's a great breakdown of a lot of my thoughts. I think what's interesting about this thing, like, I want to be super clear. I don't think either of us, I don't want to speak for Hans, but I'm very confident this is Hans's position too. This is not a Democrat Republican issue, right? And we're not here to say, oh, this is happening because, you know, Kamala bad or Trump good, Kamala good, whatever. This is, from my viewpoint, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, Hans, this is like an example of what happens when you build something that is meant to help, but it ends up hurting, right? This thing, this group is meant as a way to alleviate the pain of a disaster area, but it's actively blocking extremely competent people from helping. And so it's like when you this is what's been so eye-opening about this whole thing is, and in the loose part, it's been very eye-opening how if you take someone like an Elon Musk or somebody who's equally as productive, like let's say your top 20% entrepreneurs in the United States, once you take somebody like that and you interface them with a body that is not that, you all of a sudden get this clash of cultures And you can very quickly reveal all the weaknesses in that body, that incompetent body, let's say. And in this example, what's been very fascinating is that now we're getting this happening in a public setting because that entrepreneur happens to own a social media platform that he's leveraging to bring awareness to what he perceives are the weaknesses that exist out there, right? And I think it's plainly obvious. If you follow the flood story, even remotely closely, you know that it's been a disaster. It's been a disaster, but the response to it has been a disaster. It's been slow. There's been blocking. There's been lack of leadership, like Larry's saying, you know, and I'm not on the ground, but you just have to search the stories. Go on YouTube right now and type North Carolina flooding and you'll see it, right? And so from my perspective, it's like, okay, so extrapolate this out to anybody that lives in a, let's say, in a government capacity where the accountability is going to be much lower than, say, the private part of our economy, let's say, like private businesses. So there's a lot less accountability, i.e. it's very difficult to get fired. Politics and bureaucracy run rampant, right? And so what happens after a time where you have a lot of chaos and you have to respond quickly, when some time passes, that bureaucracy and politics and lack of expertise and experience and a lot of like CYA, cover your ass mentality, seeps in regardless of the environment that you're in. It doesn't matter if there's literally people dying and literally people suffering. That sort of mentality and that sort of approach just is birth. And I'm not saying these people that are there on the grounds are bad people, like the ones that are really trying to help. Even the people that are making the decisions about these things, my personal belief is that it's born out of a terrible set of incentives that is forcing these people to act in an almost nefarious manner, but it's a result of bodies that have very low levels of accountability. And this is the kind of thing you get.
Absolutely. Yeah. The accountability piece is huge. Is that, you know, we rarely ever measure or have any sort of feedback mechanism for, you know, does this thing that we create with the government actually do what it was intended to do? Okay. Does it solve problems or does it create problems? And in the vast majority of cases, I think it creates more problems than it solves. You know, the FBI is, you know, a great example. It was started to get a handle on organized crime during Prohibition. Prohibition itself was meant to solve the problem of alcoholism. Did it solve that problem? No. I think the problem got worse. That's why we ended up having to repeal it. And, you know, this is the type of thing that we see over and over again, is that, you know, at least in that case, the government, there was some accountability to say, okay, this prohibition didn't necessarily work. Let's go back and roll that back. That almost never happens with laws and regulations. Almost never. And it usually takes a lot of pain and suffering for something like that to happen, which is exactly what we saw during Prohibition. And so that's, you know, that's the dynamic that's at play, is that we don't account for the law of unintended consequences when we do not bake in an automatic feedback loop that says, okay, this is what we're trying to accomplish. Let's see, does this experiment, like whenever you try something, you have to realize what you're trying is an experiment. You have an idea of what it is that you're trying to do. And like, it doesn't matter how competent you are. It doesn't matter how good your motives are. You can have the best plan in the world and the best motives in your heart, and you can try and do something, and then the thing that you do can make the problem that you're trying to fix worse. And so this need for accountability doesn't have anything to do with whether or not people are good people or competent people. It has to do with the fact that the world is really messy and it's hard to accomplish what you set out with or set out to do on your first try. It a lot of times requires iteration and trying, evaluating your results. When you fail, fixing those mistakes. And that's where these processes in the government, they just don't have that. If it fails, it just gets more money and gets bigger and has more disastrous results in the long term. And that's where this clash of cultures, like you say, with Elon, where his organizations, oh, they fail a lot. But when they fail, if it's a mission critical goal that they're failing at, they are absolutely held accountable until that thing gets fixed. And so you have an organization like that bumping up against an organization where failure is celebrated with larger budgets instead of being fired. And yeah, the contrast could not be more stark. One of the things that I would add in here is that, you know, I think the vast majority of this is the result of usually good people operating in an environment, like you said, where the incentives are bad because the people who initiated the government program in the first place didn't have any accountability mechanisms put in place, like we talked about. Like there is no incentive structure that is directing this organization over time to be beneficial instead of harmful.
The other thing, the other variable to this specific situation too, is if you really think about when are bodies like this, like FEMA as an example, activated, they are activated in times of crisis, right? Think about the bar of excellence needed for time of crisis. Is, you know, you go from like the worst possible scenario to at least bad, like not something as bad, right? So the level of competence and needed for that to be called celebrated is like, hey, it's not as bad as it was, right? But it doesn't mean that it's as good as it should be. And I think that that is the metric that's missing from this whole disaster. Is like, just because you're alleviating pain and suffering doesn't mean that you're doing it at the level that it should be done or that we're capable of. Like, if you look at what happened with Katrina back during the Bush administration, like, I don't even know if that whole thing's even cleaned up yet. I'm pretty sure there are still neighborhoods out there that are still like just permanent, like the country just forgot about it. We just moved on. Right? We're like, oh yeah, too bad. Yeah, we're going to move on, right? So like, are we sure that's what we want? Like, are we sure that's the best representation of our tax dollars being put to work towards things like this happening? And not even just FEMA, but literally everybody. Like I think one thing we have to keep in mind, like if you're a United States citizen, or even if you're not a citizen, if you live in the United States and are paying federal tax, these are your dollars, right? You know, people will say, well, they set a budget and then they try to raise money for it. They're not really your dollars. It's just they're spending. I'm like, dude, we still fund the government, right? These are all our dollars that are being put to work. In the same exact body, you know, think of whatever you want to think about the immigration crisis in the United States for the last couple of years. That body is also, you know, gave a lot of migrants, illegal immigrants, whatever you want to call them, they gave them a bunch of money to help, you know, become more, you know, survive in the States, right? That same body is also saying that they're going to run out of money for the hurricane season. So it's like, okay, so what are we doing here? Like, what's going on? Like, and how do we know that those dollars are being deployed in the most efficient way possible, right?
Well, not only is there a lot of lack of correct incentives, there's also, because there is this money that's available and up for grabs, there is at least some percentage of this ineptitude that really does, I think, get attributed to malice. And I'm not saying that this is a large percentage of why FEMA is so messed up, but the lack of accountability that's built into a structure like FEMA makes it a perfect environment for something like this to happen. And so, yeah, we'll look at this is something that goes back a few years to that hurricane that I mentioned from the Keys. But let me put it up on screen. We can see that there were some private citizens that were trying to bring in supplies, and this person was able to be part of a meeting. He says, I brought supplies down to the EOC in Marathon. I was privy to the EOC meeting, but was informed in that meeting that all of the semi trucks full of food, water, and hygiene supplies were to be turned around and not allowed to be offloaded for distribution by the EOC. And I'm not sure exactly what that EOC acronym stands for. And here's the important part. The reason that they gave us was that these donations were not from companies on their preferred vendor list. And that they would not accept them or give them to the residents of the Keys impacted by the storm. It was at that point that I realized that this is really all about money. These preferred vendors are getting part of the money being released by the state and federal government for each disaster. And in turn, some of the vendors make it on the list because a friend gets them on the list. And in return for getting ridiculously outlandish amounts of compensation for the services they render, they give kickbacks. So accepting donations, even though they are on location and can help people now, they would rather let people suffer. Here, I can't tell what that was supposed to say right there.
They would rather let people suffer. I mean, that's like a perfect ending of it, right? Are you surprised that there are, and again, this is a nonpartisan issue. I want to be very clear here.
Yeah, this goes back to the Bush administration.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing that we mentioned was Katrina. I'm sure this goes back far before that. So this has been a FEMA issue, irrespective of Republican or Democratic presidents for, you know, many, many years.
Are you really that surprised that a body that can, that spends $6 to $7 trillion a year won't have barnacles and other entities that are trying to siphon as much money as possible out of that pool of money? Because that very unaccounted for, poorly accounted for, extremely inefficient deployment of that pool of money. You're telling me there aren't people tripping all over themselves to try to get a slice of that pie? Which, by the way, again, is funded by taxpayers. Right? And I don't want this to be like an anti-government video. It's not. What it is, it's a there's a reason why Congress has a 20% approval rating. It's because of stuff like this. This is a perfect example. Take, and we talked about the Boeing example too, right? The Boeing example with the Starliner thing, $5.4 billion or whatever to try and send astronauts. And the first time they do it, 6 years late, it ends up not being the thing. And then SpaceX has to go rescue those astronauts for half the cost with 13 successful launches to Boeing Zero. That's another perfect example of that. That's, they got paid double to perform infinitely worse. Okay. So that's a Boeing is a barnacle on the government taxpayer. Right. This is just another example. And I think what's important about this video is that these are the things that we have to talk about as a population. Like these are the not sexy things to talk about, but these are the things we have to talk about. Is that regardless of who your affiliation is to a party or a president, the fact is that a huge majority of the country is unhappy with our government and the way it functions. There is a reason why half the country is independent, and there's a reason why 80% of the country does not approve of Congress's job. And Congress is really what drives this country. It's not the president, it's Congress. It's the House and the Senate, right? Those numbers mean something. And this is a perfect example, thanks to the meeting of a competent body meeting an incompetent body, shedding light. Like, this is like the trend of the last few months I've noticed since Elon Musk took it political. It's like, okay, what's one of the unintended consequences that I think is going to be very good for any citizen or person that pays federal taxes? Is that you're going to have, regardless of what you think of the individual, an extremely competent person and somebody who knows how to get shit done go up against a body who does the opposite. Okay? What are the things that are going to come to light from that? Right? That's what we should be talking about, is like any weakness that shows up from that exposure, those are the things we have to go out and fix. And we need to put politics and ego aside and say, these are problems. We're not saying these are bad people, but these are they're obvious problems. So then the question becomes, how do we fix it?
Well, just to put things in context here, I think the proposed budget for FEMA in 2025, like in total, is $33.1 billion. Okay. We hold about $275 billion in Fort Knox, and it's obviously very hard to steal the gold from Fort Knox, but you have an agency that controls in 1 year more than 10% of the entire holdings of Fort Knox, and the security measures around that $33 billion budget for FEMA are like, you know, a -5 compared to Fort Knox. And so, of course, you're going to have a lot of people who are looking at that, just licking their chops, thinking, I wonder what some good ways to extract a few of those dollars out of an organization like FEMA, where, you know, they're literally just throwing money off of trucks, essentially. Yeah. So yeah, that's like, to just to put into perspective the type of opportunity and the reason that those barnacles exist, that's what it is. And so that's why you do need accountability for an organization like that, so that you can at least try to reduce the amount of waste and what we would call in the wholesale industry as spillage, or, you know,
yeah, shrink,
theft, yeah, shrinkage. And that's, you know, an unfortunate reality, but that's the reality that we're faced with here. And then when you throw, and this is just, you know, one agency, this is just FEMA. Now we've got, you know, all kinds of other agencies that are exactly like this. And so, you know, the amount of regulatory dollars that are put out, or, you know, government subsidized dollars for public services that go into the economy, it's like way bigger than, you know, what we hold in Fort Knox. And so obviously that's where your thieves are going to congregate. When you put Elon in the middle of that, it starts like shining a light on, oh, there's waste here, there's thievery here, there's something screwy and messed up going on over there. That is, for the sake of the country, something that needs to be exposed, and it needs to be fixed, but it is going to involve, on Elon's part, like all those people that are grifting money, or even the ones who aren't grifting money, the ones who are just comfortable in the organization the way it is, like they are not going to appreciate someone coming in from the outside and exposing things that are messed up and bringing accountability. Like, accountability is very uncomfortable, and people who have not been accountable for a long time, who have a nice cushy job, are by and large not going to appreciate that. And we've seen this already once with Elon when he went to X. Like, if you remember all of the messages that were getting shared on Twitter when it was still Twitter before Elon bought it, by all the employees who were like, oh, who is this guy? Like, he came to our all hands meeting. What a tool bag. He's such a jerk, blah, 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 blah. And then he came in, and like, it was a huge culture clash. And a lot of people just like, they couldn't handle him, period. And they left, you know, for one reason or another, immediately upon his arrival. And then over the time, it even got whittled down further. And so, you know, I don't know in these government agencies what it looks like if they could do the work that they do currently on, you know, with 20% of the staff that they currently have or not. I'll bet you it's roughly equal. But can you imagine the political uproar that doing an X transformation to something like FEMA would cause? Like, the noise around that is going to be insane. And this is, you know, this was one of my takeaways from our conversation with Rohan, that he, I think, correctly pointed out the fact that Donald Trump wants to use Elon as almost like a sacrificial lamb or a scapegoat, like to do a lot of unpopular things that need to be done. And that I think Elon is going to take a lot of, and we've seen this over and over again with people who are around Donald Trump, like they get chewed up and spit out. And I think that, especially if Elon is effective, not like in the off chance that he's effective, this might happen. I think if he is effective, this is more likely to happen, that it will be super, super politically unpopular for quite a while. It will make all of the Elon derangement syndrome we've seen to this point look like child's play. And that actually does, you know, I think it makes me concerned both on his behalf and just for all of the important things that he wants to do. But I also believe that it is like the reason that I don't think that Elon doesn't know this. And I think he is signing up for that job, knowing that that's the job description, because that's what needs to be done. And this is just,
someone's got to do it.
Yeah. This is what leadership is. You have to do the thing that's going to be super unpopular right now, but that is necessary in order for the good of whatever organization it is that you're contributing to survive over the long term. And in this case, we're talking about the United States. But yeah, that is something that I feel like the further we go down this path of Elon growing all of the constellation of companies that he has and in his political influence, I think he's going to become the most polarizing human in history, period, bar none.
You think so? In the world or in American history?
I don't know, potentially the world.
I think what's very interesting about that, so if Trump were to win, not an endorsement, but if Trump were to win, I think Elon will automatically become involved with his whatever efforts that are, but they are not, I don't know how effective he's going to be able to be when he has so much vested interest in private companies that interface with government, you know? Like if it's anything to do with transportation, defense, communications, one can make an argument that the second he gets involved in those areas, people are going to scream from the rooftops that it's a conflict of interest. And they would have a very strong case. Yeah. Yeah, because it's like, yeah, like how come you're cutting this stuff but not your own stuff? Like, that's one of the things they could make, right? The other stuff is more like if he's, like, say, dealing in healthcare. They say he has no vested interest in healthcare. The second one of his decisions leads to something negative happening, the opposite political spectrum, whatever that is, are going to be chomping at the bit for that single piece to come out, and then it's the propaganda machine runs. Whatever you want to call it, the media machine's going to run, right? And now one, you know, this X play so interesting now because Elon now is uncancelable. Short of the United States making X illegal, right? Because of misinformation, which will not happen under a Trump presidency. I do not suspect that will happen, but who knows? Crazier things have happened, right? Now this kind of play, it's kind of like he's leveraging all his tools to be like, okay, how can I be successful during this thing, right? Like, let's say he gets elected, and let's say he is effective, right? I think his track record, there's one thing he does well, again, is making things more efficient. His track record just proves it, right? So, yeah, dude, what a weird time. And if he doesn't, and if Trump doesn't get elected, okay, what is the relationship going to be like between Elon and the Kamala Harris administration? What's going to happen to X? What's going to happen to Tesla? What's going to happen to SpaceX? I think SpaceX will be fine because literally every other company can't, it's like impossible. That's too big of an advancement. And maybe he knows that. I heard somebody else saying this. Maybe he knows that. Maybe he knows, like, hey, I don't care what you guys think of me. Your space capability is nothing without me. It's nothing, which is a national security issue. So you can say whatever you want. And Rohan mentioned this, I believe, if I remember correctly. Or it may have been somebody else. You can hate me as much as you want. You need me. You need me. Right? So, like, think about that poker chip. You know? Unless the United States is like, no, we don't need you. we'll stop going to space. Forget that, right? So anyway, very interesting times. Super interesting times, and are we going to be covering that. Regardless of what happens, these next 4 years are going to be nuts. They're going to be nuts. They're going to be crazy, Hans. Then we got automated systems taking flight. We got self-driving vehicles down the pike. We got autonomous robots, humanoid robots down the pike. We've got artificial intelligence down the pike. We got crazy advancements in medicine. Like, it's going to be this decade is insane. It's already insane, and it's going to be even insaner. That's not a word, but I will use it.
The insaner acceleration.
The insaner acceleration. Come back next week for the next episode of the Insaner Acceleration with Hans and Farzad.
Yeah, it is just wild. I mean, we've already had the port strikes have come and gone now, and apparently the dock workers are back to work. And
yeah,
like it's just little thing like this after little thing like this over and over again, and compounding. Because there is so much uncertainty around, you know, what are all those things going to look like? What's AI? How is it going to contribute? What's it going to change? And what are the implications for normal everyday people? What are the implications for government? Especially, you know, after our conversation also with Adam Doerr,
yeah,
last on Tuesday, just really drove home the point that, you know, I think all of this bureaucratic bloat that we have experienced here in the United States, which, I mean, it is frustrating, but it's still not as bad here as it is in a lot of places, which is the even more crazy thing. You know, there's only a few places in the world whose bureaucratic bloat is less problematic than the United States. and that, but this bureaucratic bloat that we're talking about is the same stuff that is what causes companies to die when we're talking about disruptive innovation, that these incumbents, that they get really successful and then they get really big and then they develop all these systems. Like, these systems are bureaucracy, and they are like all the little strings that Gulliver is tied down by, you know, when he's on the Lilliputian island. And it leads to this big, seemingly invincible, invulnerable thing just being eviscerated by itty bitty tiny little beings. And, you know, whether that is Netflix demolishing Blockbuster or Argentina out competing the United States over, you know, the next couple decades in becoming one of the biggest global powers, like, that is something that is possible. Like, there's a lot of things that make these frontier places where people can go and they can get stuff done and they can be unencumbered by nonsense. Like, rules and regulations are important, but they also serve a purpose. And when people lose sight of what that purpose is, then those rules and regulations, going back to the law of unintended consequences, actually become the cause of things that they were meant to protect against.
Yeah. One of the most like craziest things that I read on X that speaks directly to what you're talking about, and this was like so succinctly put, was the United States is suffering from the innovator's dilemma. And if you're not familiar with that concept, I highly recommend you read the book, The Innovator's Dilemma, by, I forget the guy's name.
Clayton Christensen. He was a professor at Harvard Business School. And it's funny, like, when you step back and you think about it.
Before Harvard went to shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so he taught, you know, all of the MBAs that came out of Harvard that, you know, then went on to take over all these large companies. And when you zoom out and you realize what it is that he wrote, he was wrestling with the fact that all these companies that operated by the Harvard Business School playbook in industries where technological change was happening, they all died. Doing what HBS taught them to do killed them. Because they were in an environment that teaching and philosophy was irrelevant in. And so this was, you know, where you listen to your customers and what they want, and you don't think about what the world could be that people don't understand now. And you get bogged down in only doing things that move the needle for your, you know, when you're Apple, for example, and you need to grow your revenue. It's hard to buy Tesla when they're a tiny little auto company, because even if they're successful, well, that's not going to move the needle on my billions of dollars of annual revenue. Never mind the fact that 10 years from now, they're going to eclipse us in, you know, sales globally in revenue. Because at the time when the opportunity is available, it looks like it is completely inconsequential next to what it is that you're doing today. And you don't understand that there's an exponential curve that is playing out that is going to make that thing that's tiny today be absolutely catastrophic to your business 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now.
And by the time you realize that, it's way too late, way too late. So you almost have to, in a weird way, unless you spend tens or hundreds of hours researching that trend, it will be impossible for you to come to this conclusion because it's going to be way too easy to ignore, you know? And I'd be curious to see how AI helps us identify those situations.
Well, better. And even when you understand it, it's hard to escape from it. His case studies, there were only a couple of companies that survived one of those types of technological transitions. And the only way that they did it was by operating an independent spinoff. Like it was impossible for those companies specifically that he studied to transition from one generation of the technology to the next generation of the technology completely inside of the big organization that they had built, which couldn't be sustained during that transition period. From one technology to the other.
Book you have to read, Innovator's Dilemma, Clayton Christensen. Clayton Christensen. Okay. I say we leave it there. I know we have a huge event coming up next week with Robotaxi. Those that follow this channel know that we cover the Musk space closely. Next week is going to be the Robotaxi unveil on 1010 on Thursday. Tentatively speaking, it looks like it's going to be 7 p.m. Pacific or 9 p.m. Central or 10 p.m. Eastern. So bring a glass of wine or whiskey or beer or water or juice, whatever you'd like, along with myself, Hans, and other guests as well. We'll likely start coverage half an hour to an hour before that, right on this channel. We're also going to have an interview with Pierre Farragut, who's one of the top Wall Street analysts, and I'm sure I mispronounced his name, his beautiful French name. But he'll be with us before and after the event, tentatively on Friday, but he'll be with us on the Wednesday to, we're going to sit down and cover what we expect out of the event, you know, predictions and what we think they're going to show. And then Friday after the event, we're going to reconvene, hopefully, and see what happened and see what it's going to look like. Like in the future. And then the following week, we'll have Tasha Keeney from ARK Invest on Monday, tentatively, but it looks like we're going to be in good shape there. She's going to join us to talk about what she saw at the Robotaxi unveil. Tasha works with ARK Invest, and she's one of the primary people covering this space super closely. So we have a ton of amazing content coming, y'all, related specifically to self-driving vehicles and Tesla. And I haven't been this excited about an event in a long, long time. And I think it's going to blow people's minds. I hope. Can you tell I'm biased? But I really am. I'm very excited. I think it's going to make a lot of noise and rounds, and the implications from that are going to be fantastic. So any closing thoughts, Hans, before we hit the edit?
Yeah, I'm excited about all of those. And I'm almost even more excited for the episode that we'll do probably a week or so after Tasha, maybe 2 weeks, depending. And that is going to be James Dauma's breakdown of the Robotaxi event as well. That's going to be super fascinating to get his insights on what it is that he learned, and also just to catch up with him and get his refreshed and updated take on the progress of FSD and where we're at on the road to Robotaxis.
Yeah. So if you're watching this, James, check your DMs, bro. Let's lock in that date. Super excited for everybody attending the event. There's a ton of people covering the space closer that are attending the event. I think everyone that I know is going to the event, except for Hans and I. we can't, we have responsibilities, unfortunately, but
if it had been in Austin, I would have really tried to make it happen, but
it would have been a lot easier if it was in Austin. I got to fly all the way to LA, but we 4 month old, and Hans got kiddos too that he's taking care of, so we got to be you know, family man first. But we'll be here, we'll be covering it live, and it's going to be so fun.
And excited for all the California people to have a big event back in their you know, backyard again, since I mean obviously they've had lots over the history of Tesla, but it's been a while. A lot of the stuff has happened here in Austin recently, so
we're saving a real big one for them, so it's super exciting. Okay, everybody, like, subscribe, comment, support, links in the description, all that good stuff. Hans, you should list your referral code in the comments.
Yes, please. If you are going to buy a new Tesla, use my referral link. You can find it. It's in my profile on X. I actually could really use the help so that I can go get some repair work done on my used Tesla, which has an issue with the air conditioning compressor. So anyway, if you want to support me and you're going to buy a Tesla anyways, I would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, look at him. Perfect. All right. Thank you all very much. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.